Hey, welcome everybody to Pottycast, or Potty Break. The Tim Hawkins podcast. Shush, you're not supposed to talk yet. I haven't introduced you yet. I don't even know the name of my own show.
I'm not sure.
Potty Break, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
I think I'm thrown off a little bit, Caleb. I just did a Bob Smiley. Went into the building that we're at right now, that we're doing a show at tonight. Went into the restroom. You walk in. It's automatic light.
Oh.
Sensor light.
Yeah.
And doing my beeswax. Halfway through, doink, lights turn off. You're just sitting there playing Angry Birds and hoping nobody comes in. Because it's like if they walk in and they see that that it was dark and it came on the light, then you know that they knew you were in the dark.
They're wondering they what don't you're
know.
Doing.
If they don't know, then you got to do the sniff that you're in there.
Oh, that's so, a good idea. Sniff.
Shut up. You're
I'm
not
sorry.
Supposed to talk yet.
I'm just so moved by what you're saying.
My goodness, people. We're trying to do... We're trying to do a podcast here.
We're trying to do a professional intro, and our special guest is jumping in before.
Keeps piping in.
Sorry.
Keeps piping in. He's never done this before. Caleb, we got a very special guest on the show today.
We do.
Darren Streblo. How many awesome comics, world-class comics, do you know from Cloquet, Minnesota? Start naming
them.
None.
I don't know any.
None. Cloquet, the crappiest town probably on the map. And this guy, somehow...
We have a Walmart.
It was a lot of rough, and this is the diamond in the rough. He's with us, Darren Streblo.
Hello.
Darren has the Darren Streblo comedy show.
Yes, sir.
Shut up! You're not supposed to talk! The Darren Streblo comedy show, and he's been a buddy of mine for many, 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 many years. And so we're going to talk and hang out with Darren today on the tour bus, the comedy tour bus, rock show. Yeah, you know the deal. So... let's do it. Okay.
What?
Just keep talking?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, guys. When you go into somebody's house,
yeah,
you don't just go right into conversation. What you do is you say, you walk into the front door and you say, hey, there's a new plant. Okay. Where'd you get that? Or, hey, who's that over there? Is that your kid? You know, you say something about the surroundings. So I don't want to just jump right in with you, Darren, talk about that. So I thought usually we were talking coffee a little bit earlier.
Yes, sir.
And you are, tell me your relationship with coffee.
My relationship with coffee, I think I had a relationship with coffee since I was very small, but I didn't know it. I think coffee was working on my life and eventually warmed to it. But it was really it wasn't until my 30s that I, repented of coffeelessness and then jumped in both feet.
But see, now you come from Cloquet, Minnesota, which is up pretty close to what's the big town there? Duluth.
Yes.
So you would think that would be something that they put in baby bottles up there.
Well,
just something
it is
warm.
Actually, but you know, it's not. It's a Scandinavian state. Lots of Scandinavians there.
Yeah,
and they like their coffee rather. If they can't see through it, they get kind of frightened. It's kind of a weak sort of coffee. Their recipe basically is you take some tepid water and you take a couple of beans and gingerly dip both beans in the water. Not too much because you don't want to ruin that robust water flavor.
So you take a bean in each hand.
Yeah, just kind of dip it
in tepid water.
Yeah, and then you serve that to a Baptist church, a 3-gallon tank of that stuff, and people rave about it. My father-in-law is one of these guys that just, that's his favorite type of coffee. So when I brought him to the house and I have an espresso machine that I love, and I gave him a proper cup of coffee. And at first I offered him some tea, and he says, tea is for women. Give me some coffee.
Right.
So then I gave him a real cup of coffee. Then he ran to the bathroom. I didn't see him for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And when he came back, he asked for tea.
Yeah. What is that about men? It's like men, they want something, a bitter, that's for a man, something bitter, something that hurts. Yeah, it's all like, come on, what is this? Coats are for sissies, frostbites for a man. It doesn't hurt, so it must not be for a man. Where does that thinking come? That's got to get to us in some psychological way.
I don't know.
Like, if it doesn't hurt, then something's wrong.
Yeah,
It's like if it's like Christianity, it's a lot of churches. If it feels good, don't do it. That's like for a man. If it feels good, you're not a man.
You know, that's a really good point on the spiritual front, because you think, okay, the answer to spirituality is, because there's a lot of things that feel good that are destructive, but if you just cut off everything that feels good about spirituality, it also destroys your relationship with God, because that is a really good relationship. That is the ultimate joy, the ultimate feel good. So if you have to be wise in the things that you cut off that feel good. I think ultimately, if you have a great relationship with God, everything feels good because you're doing the things that you were wired to do from the guy who wired you to do it.
Because if you say, like, I had a good relationship with my natural father, you know, you're not thinking, you're thinking you had a lot of fun together.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I think a lot of people in Christianity, you take it that way, and a lot of people think you got to be a martyr. You got to be going through some kind of struggle. That's where God wants you to be.
Yeah.
And if you're not,
then... I was doing an event, and the speaker was up front, and it was a lot of youth pastors there, and the speaker was just saying, if we're doing things for ourselves, if we are worshiping in a way that feels good, we are doing it wrong. And I saw a lot of people nodding their heads, and I was like, what baloney.
So they start handing out cat-o'-nine-tails. Just start whipping your back.
You know, if it's all
Chris
about...
Chris Tomlin's up. I want to see some blood.
If it's all about just, you know, feeling groovy out there, I get that. But, you know, if you treated your wife that way, your relationship would end. I mean, it's like, I'm only spending time with you because this is sacrificial.
Yeah.
I don't want to spend any time with you that actually feels good to me. No, you have a self-motivated desire for joy when you have a relationship with your spouse. And the same is true with God, I think. And I think that's why he gives us laughter. I think that's just a big taste of what an eternity with God would be like. That laughter when we're sitting in your show, Tim, and you're up there playing and doing your stand-up, and we're laughing so hard we can't breathe. That's just a taste of the joy we're going to have someday in heaven, you know, and there is some self motivation there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's okay.
Well, there's a place for reverence. Absolutely.
Sure.
But there's also a place, I mean, I've done shows. You'll be telling your first few jokes, and it's almost like people are like, are we allowed to laugh? Is this, I've been in this room, you know, 1,000 times, but we've never, you know, they've never been almost given the permission to do that.
Yeah.
And then after a while, it's like you're giving them permission to, we're going to laugh now. I have nothing else to bring.
I did a show, and I'm sure you've done exactly this. It was somewhere near Washington, D.C., and it was this big, big church, and I was up there. I was amazed how many people were there, and then I started doing the show, and it was like maybe little hints of laughter through the whole thing, and I thought, they hate me. They hate me. But then you could hear a pin drop while I was telling the jokes. And I went, I think they like it. Mm-hmm. I just don't. So I just kind of acted like I was enjoying it. I was nervous, but I'm kind of laughing at my own jokes and doing the whole thing. And they were just staring at me. And afterwards, I had a line out the door of people saying, that is the funniest thing I have ever seed and they're hugging me, and some people are getting emotional talking about how funny it was. They just didn't feel permission to
What kind of
react.
A church was it? What was
I don't remember, but it was obvious. I was the first time they ever had somebody up, you know, and you're in their sanctuary, you're doing jokes right by where the pastor preaches, so I'm sure it's a different sort of, you know, you have to get into a different sort of mode to be able to.
Well, it's tough too, because you have all the accoutrement of the church. You know, you have big crosses.
Is that a word? That
accoutrement
is cool.
That means things that just
good word.
Yeah,
word of the day.
I did a Reader's Digest. They'll have, like, you know, word of the day or. Word.
You're awesome, man.
Anyway, the accoutrement. It just means the things like little things around that. Little
in
details. Details in the vicinity of that. Yeah. So, like, Darren's accoutrement would be, you know, crappy t-shirt, sandals from, you know, from Kohl's. and is that an Alabama hat?
This, okay.
Baseball cap?
I had a buddy of mine give me this hat in Alabama. It's a Roll Tide hat.
Once again, Darren's from Minnesota.
Yeah, and people stop me on airplanes. It scares me every time. Roll Tide! Woo! Yeah.
Well, and it looks like it, it looks soiled.
I have no idea what they're talking about.
And it looks soiled. Yeah, you're like, Roll Tide.
And I've had this. I've had this for years. It's the only hat that fits my gigantic melon.
Do you have a big? I do too.
I see you wearing hats all the time.
Yeah,
though.
But it's like at the last. You know, they've the what are those hats called that we have? Where you adjust them?
The snapbacks?
The snapback hats. And I'm at the very last,
little cusp.
Little cusp where it kind of V's a little bit.
And yeah.
My dad's head was big too. He'd wear a real baseball cap, but he'd have to slit it off the back of it so it would go a little farther out. So I was blessed with that.
This hat.
But that hat is like a real crush. It's like flat. That looks like something that you would wear out on. In the farm.
It's very well.
Do you remember
it's beloved.
Rick Ankiel's hat? Was it him that never washed his hats?
From the Cardinals?
Yeah. That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
The A is dirty. It looks good.
Now, I've gone to hat stores and I said, I doubt you're going to find anything that can fit this. And they go, oh, we serve all kinds of people. And then after a while, they're like, sir, we're very sorry. We didn't know you were a freak. Now, but the ones that have, you know, this is kind of, I don't know, it's a shallow hat. I don't know how they did it, but
yeah,
it just fits the
it's
very top.
Shallow.
If I get a hat, like a normal size hat, where it actually fits the circumference of my hat, there's so much headroom on the top, and I look like the Pope. Because it's just way
you're
up
accentuating
high.
Your big head.
It's a truly a 5-10 gallon hat. You know, it could fit a lot of liquid.
Yeah. Well, my wife made this hat that I'm wearing now, and I thank you for not poking fun because it's not her artistry with making. I've got like a what would you call it, beanie? Kind of a beanie made out of yarn, and it's my head. Just it's hard to make my head look good.
She did that.
I mean, she did that.
That's
look like
love. Look at that.
I look like a Spanish Inquisition. Person, like I'm going to torture somebody in a dungeon after we get
I
done.
I did you like the floppy one from last year.
Yeah,
though.
I know. I lost the floppy one.
He
it was awesome, and it flopped
hat,
just perfect.
It was like two hats in one. It was that big, and it kind of looked like a Rastafarian hat, and it was flopping down his back. It was great.
Beautiful.
He used to wear it every day.
You
and then, of
like
course,
a,
those hats you lose.
A Scandinavian sheep farmer, a loved one.
Yeah, I do.
You look very loved.
And who
sheep
loves
farmer.
Who loves light coffee?
Light coffee, just the two beans.
Now, this guy over here is a coffee snob. Caleb.
Yeah, by the way, I'm drinking my very first pour-over coffee today.
Yeah,
and
Caleb.
I'm very happy.
Caleb everybody
Caleb
is running the board. But he's become a coffee connoisseur.
Four words. Listen to that.
You're
I shouldn't even
bad.
Have a radio show.
Yeah. He is
it's making us look.
He's
bad.
Really good. I mean, he, you got what's the thing called the Skrillex? What's it called?
Skrillex.
What is it?
Talking about the dubstep artist?
No, the glass. What do you call it? The Chemex.
Oh, Chemex. Yeah, Chemex is the glass. It's a form of the pour over. But I just did a V60. Matt, our merch manager, made a pour over cup for Darren.
It's lovely. Yeah.
But he didn't use the scale.
No.
So we almost got in a physical altercation.
There was a lot of tension here in the front of the bus. I was a little nervous that
because
there was
going to
be an altercation.
Because you have to weigh your water.
Yeah,
when
it's
you
ridiculous.
Pour your water, you can't
I'm
going
to have to put my foot down in it. I've let it go for a couple of months.
Well, Tim says you can feel it. You can't feel it.
Seriously,
like you have to measure the water.
I was trying to make my first pour over, and he just was glaring at me from the other
the
side of the bus.
The day before, you asked me how to do it. So the day before, I went through all the details with you, and then I wake up the next morning, and the grinder's rolling, and I walk up, and he's just pouring the water with no scale.
No, okay. I measured the dang beans on your scale.
No, but you have to measure the water when you pour it.
I know.
It.
I didn't do that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Let me just throw this out there so that we can all understand where I'm coming from.
All right.
If you want to make your coffee without the scale, that's totally cool.
Okay.
That's totally cool. Right. I'm not going to ostracize you.
Yeah.
But if we're making coffee for somebody else and we want to, serve them with a glorious cup of coffee, we have to use the scale.
For the record, I'm very happy with
it. So you're enjoying you're enjoying that. You say you're an espresso guy.
I do love espresso. A little too much. I have a little too many shots of espresso.
Now you also mentioned to me that you're a hero at your house because you call them frou-frou drinks for your wife
foo-foo
and her friends.
Coffees.
Foo-foo.
You make a fufu.
Yeah, fufu.
What is
coffee.
That?
I fufu drink.
Well, I would any fufu. Sort of, you know, the sugared lattes, the chocolate. Mm-hmm.
It's like sugar and milk with a little bit of coffee in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which my wife's friends, when they come over, and my wife's they like that. So like a nice salted caramel macchiato is a lovely thing.
Freight loves
or
that.
Just the basic, it can even be a Hershey's chocolate. But if you do it right, with a little bit of whipped cream and some little sprinkles on the top.
Wow. So you're the favorite. Happy.
I am a superhero in that context.
Do you wear an apron? Like a barista
apron?
You
know, I don't know what a barista apron is, but I have a cookie. I love to cook, and I wear an apron, and I get a lot of crap for that.
Do you pencil in a small, thin mustache that curls up and talk with a weird accent?
I cannot work in these conditions! And scream at people and get really ugly.
Your coffee comes when it comes. Don't rush good coffee.
No coffee for you! So, yeah, it's...
But you ever notice, here's an observation that I've had, is that it's always, when somebody else makes coffee for you, it's always better than when you make yourself. It's like a sandwich. When somebody else makes you a sandwich, it just tastes better.
Yeah.
It's like when you go to other people's house, their milk tastes a little different. You ever notice that?
That's true.
Noticed that.
Why is that?
Yeah.
Their milk tastes a little different. Like you're a little creeped out
going
by
to
it.
Your neighbors. I'm just not in the mood for our milk at home. Do you have a cup?
Yeah.
That I can
and I'll make my own, you know. Cereal. I won't even ask him if I can do it. I'll just make my own cereal at their house.
It's true.
Tim's
he will.
In our kitchen again.
He will do that. He'll drink right out of the jug. Darian, are you satisfied with the espresso shots that you pull at your house, or do you still prefer espresso from another place?
You know, I'm kind of the opposite, Tim. I like making my own stuff.
It's because you're a professional.
Well, you know, yeah. I just love the process of making stuff a lot. I almost like it better than actually sitting down and enjoying it later. It's kind of a joy.
Does it feel better when you tickle yourself than when somebody else tickles you?
No.
Because that's what it sounds like to me.
Well, I used to try to do that. But when you do that, like on an airplane, try to tickle yourself, I find that people start talking to security and there's concerns.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I try not to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a pilot. We've got someone's trying to tickle themselves. Back in coach. We've got it taken care of, but we're going to get that tank taken care of. Then we're going to take off in just a few minutes, just as soon as this guy stops.
That's our pilot. That's our first special character.
That's the first? And
we
I
might,
get to be a part of it?
We might
That's
hear
wonderful.
From IKEA Man. We might hear from IKEA Man later.
Can I? Oh, wow. I got to hear that.
Yeah. I haven't even heard IKEA Man.
There's a new catalog out, and he's really excited about it.
You know, okay. I've never been in one. I just know there's endless hallways and meatballs. That's all I've heard.
Yeah, buddy. Now let's talk about you a little bit, Cloquet. Now, are you from there? You grew up where?
Born in Ely, Minnesota, commonly pronounced Eli by those not in the know.
Mm-hmm.
My dad moved us out of there in the, let's see, I was 8 years old, moved to Duluth, and I've been in the Duluth, Minnesota area for my whole life since then. A very cold environment, very, very Scandinavian. People don't laugh out loud.
Lutefisk.
Uncomfortable. Lutefisk, Lefse. A lot of people who listen to Prairie Home Companion.
And, that's the people that he's talking about, right? That's
yeah.
That's it.
And I grew up on loving that show.
Yeah.
Because he just describes it so well. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, now what do you like now? You've obviously like it, or you'd moved away probably, unless
like
you're being held there against
family.
Your will.
I don't really know. When I travel, and I say, "What is that brilliant heated light thing in the sky that makes me so happy?" Maybe I could move closer to where one of those are. But
that's Vishnu.
Vishnu
or Vishna. Vishna.
Vishna.
Vishna. Yeah.
Okay, I like that. I like the way you say
I'm
that.
I'm Hindu
did
now.
You know that?
Did
all
I
these
tell
words
you that?
Today.
I'm Hindu.
Are you Hindu?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would not have guessed that based
so
on
many gods.
Things you say in your show.
There's so many wonderful gods. This is just one of them.
And they all lead to the same place.
That
right.
hat does look Hindu-ish now that you mention it.
Yeah. I don't.
What does it look like? It kind of looks like a chef hat.
It looks like the top of a pepper shaker.
Well, how would you explain it to everyone that can't see it?
I just picture your wife listening right now, just very nervous about what you're going to say next, because it's such a well-made look. It's
well, got bless a her beautiful... heart. Well, bless her heart, she didn't know when to stop. I mean, because of my headish, my head size. So
I almost coughed up pour over coffee.
Yeah. Watch it.
I don't
special
know.
Coffee.
This, and this well, special, it's like better enjoy every here. Drop of it. Yeah.
It's almost like a mushroom. It looks like the top of a muffin. Like it a looks muffin,
super
like a muffin top.
Warm. And it,
mushroom.
It's just,
yeah, it is.
You've got a happy glow too.
Dude, thanks. So you grow up around Duluth.
Yeah.
Things are good. Decent childhood. Describe it. Was it okay?
I was provided a decent childhood. I don't know if I participated in that way. I think I was a little too, you know, the comic thing. You're just very idealistic, and the guy that you want to be scares other people, so you have to kind of hide that guy. He's the guy that.
Were you a pervert? What are you talking about?
That's an excellent question.
It seems like you just get to it. What was your deal?
When you see me on stage and in proper conditions, that guy, that's probably as close to the real me as I get. And when I would let that guy out in public as a kid, granted, he was not as comically savvy as the guy on stage. That would scare other people. People wouldn't want to be around me because it's too much. He's too much. I don't think he's mean or unfriendly, but he's just too much. And so...
Too much, you mean that he wants attention or too much that
he wants
just
a lot of
doesn't
attention.
Know how to turn it off?
He loves attention.
So did you not get attention when you were a kid?
No.
I mean, do you feel like there was something your comedy comes from, a need that you wasn't fulfilled
well,
in your life?
I don't want to give the impression that this was anybody else's
fault. Put your shirt
fault.
Back on. Why are you taking your shirt off right now?
I am not, for the record, taking off my shirt right now. Just for the record.
Darren.
Your word against
Darren,
ours.
Stand down, Darren. Stand down.
Caleb's going to back up Tim no matter what he says. It wasn't anybody else's fault. It's just I think when you have this kind of a personality, what do you do with it? You know, so I had to push that personality down and try to be the kind of guy that somebody would want to hang out with.
Yeah.
And that guy is, I have the same, I think I've told you this before. I took that Myers-Briggs personality test.
Yes.
And I am an INFP.
Okay.
Which is exactly the same as Mr. Rogers.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm Dax Shepard. I'm joined by Minister Mouse, Monica Padman.
Hi there.
We have a really fun show we want you guys to join. We talk to celebrities and professors and lawyers and doctors and very smart, interesting people. And we find out how messy their lives have been, how many twists and turns it took to get to where they're at, and a general exploration on the messiness of being a human being. And of course, Monica's, you'll get updates about her.
Love
building
life.
Project, love life, you name it. So if you want to join us, please follow Armchair Expert to get new episodes every Monday and Thursday. Plus, find your other favorite podcasts free on Spotify.
Really?
Yeah. And when the person tested me, she turned pale and she said, "We usually only see this with introverted women, and I don't really know what to say to you right now." And I'm like, oh, great.
Wow.
Charles Schulz is built this way. So I'm very, very... I'm very aware. My emotions are very loud, but at the same time, like a lot of attention.
And you like to talk to puppets?
And I like to talk. I did puppets. That's the thing that people don't know about me. When I was in church, we had the puppet things. And we did these full Muppet-like puppet shows. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of a nice way to learn how to do stage work, you know, standing
or to get a reaction or to...
Yep. Because they'd actually put a mic in my hand and I would do live stuff.
Yes.
And react to people.
Interesting.
I remember one time, I think the pastor was talking to the puppet and I had a live mic in my hand. And he's just like, "Oh, this puppet is just stupid. What a stupid puppet." And I said, "Well, can you think clearly with a hand up your back?" That was the 8 years old or whatever when I said that. And the place went nuts. Just listen to that sound. Listen to everybody laugh.
Yeah.
You know, so it was kind of a taste of you know, live stage work or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, very sensitive. And I think I don't know what kind of environment that I would have really thrived in with that, unless I just really had adults around me. The reason this is happening is you are like this, and this is, and I'm going to walk you through how to get through this and have your personality survive. And it's just, you know, people don't have that kind of time, or I'm trying to do that with my sons.
Yes.
Because I see some of that in them, and I was like, okay, this, what you're going through is normal. And, you know, you're very sensitive, but you're very, you want to be on stage. It's okay to be, you know, and with growing up in church settings, talking about that earlier, when you're a performer, you're wired to be a performer, that's looked down on as, well, you're a selfish person that wants attention. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that's necessarily true.
Yeah.
I think you can be that way, but the people who really want to be in front of people, God wires you that way because he's got things he wants you to do in that direction. You can take that to a place that's wrong, but you know, I try to encourage that in my boys. I try to get them in, they do plays and they do music. And my oldest son plays like 12 different instruments and stuff.
Right.
He's like Caleb here. How many instruments do you play? Is it just guitars? I get the impression you play everything.
No, I don't. I mainly play guitar, but
okay, you know,
I
can, like, I'm wrong about it. You. You're not as talented as I thought.
Yeah.
But my son plays like 12. Ooh,
let's turn around.
Wow.
That was a shorter road than I thought. let's look for a driveway we can back into.
You were in Guitar Center this morning playing on a guitar, and I thought, I was, you ever walk into, like, during Christmas time, you walk in a store and there's like a light display and you see it in your peripheral vision and there's a lot of lights flashing around and you hear kind of music. That's what it's like walking in Guitar Center this morning. It's like, what is that activity going on? And there's just this happy face and there's Caleb over there just jamming away on a guitar.
Yeah, usually there's that. Now, I think we could do a sitcom with that based around the Guitar Center store.
Oh my gosh.
Just all the freakos that walk in there.
Goodness,
you know, you got the 58-year-old guy with the American flag MC Hammer pants on. And the tank top with the long beard, just going there and grabbing a guitar and thinking that's his big shot.
Man, we saw a guy. Where was that? I think it was at a Guitar Center in Texas, like a year and a half ago. And he was looking at that little guitar. Do you remember that?
Was that the older guy?
Yeah. It was like the guy that you're talking about. You know, he's 55 years old and balding on top, but had still grown his hair out in the back. Just going down his back and.
That's what I'm going to have to do soon. Just to
the Ben Franklin.
Yeah.
I respect it, though. I mean, he was just going for it.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, that sounds like respect.
But you're talking about, like, Rick, performing, and I don't, like, need for attention. I don't know.
Don't you feel that
I need? Like attention. I'm not going to lie to you. I do like it, but I really think more I just like being good at something. That's what...
That's interesting.
I was desperate because so many other jobs that I just wasn't good at, didn't want to be good at it, or I wasn't. And then I just really am grateful that, you know, I know how to, when it comes to, if there's 2,000 people or without out there, I know what to do. And
that's really interesting because one thing about you that I think is different from other comedians that I've seen is you don't seem to get the high from the notoriety and the fame that a lot of people do.
Mm-mm.
I don't believe in it. You're very real in that sense.
Don't believe in it. And now I think, you know, I'm more motivated by someone who connects with what I'm doing and gets benefit out of it. And just, they say, oh, my kid recites your lines all over the house.
Yeah.
That's cool. Because I know that's how I started, is that I just mimicked my favorite comics or their faces or their gestures and things like that. And that's how I learned. I think that's how a lot of guys learn. You're taught. You're a baby. You're just taught the basics of spit takes and of you know, certain physical comedy and things like that.
And there's not really a lot of places when you want to do comedy that you can go to learn. You know, if you want to learn music, there's probably, no matter what size town you're in, places you can go pay somebody to start working you in that direction. When you're a comic, you have to go to a TV screen and just study and just see, okay, this is what, you know, I spent hours watching like Victor Borga.
Yeah.
You know, and people don't even know who that is anymore.
No.
But Danish piano player, virtuoso, mm-hmm. kind of just an amazing, and just, he did yeah. stand up and
classical piano player, but then he just turned that into he was funnier, even funnier than he was. Well, good he would do piano.
He would open, I think it was like 45 minutes of stand up.
Yeah.
And it was hysterical.
Yeah.
And
he talked like this, the Victor Borga. He would get, now I remember his bit, he would play, he would be looking at the paper, the sheet music, and it'd be bum, 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 just total, just. Actually, it was reverse. He was playing the song in reverse, and he goes, oh, and he turns it back around. It was upside down. He turns around.
People our age, he was the guy on Sesame Street that would put the seatbelt on when he was on the piano bench. If you remember that guy,
yeah,
he did inflationary language, where you take the numbers in the language, like wonderful. Before, you know, the numbers in the words, and then inflate it one. So it's like wonderful becomes tutorful, before becomes B5.
Yeah.
The phrase, I ate a tenderloin with my fork, would be I nined a tenderloin with my fike. And he would do a whole story.
Wasn't
about
he
that.
The guy that did the punctuation?
Yes.
Once upon a time, Dev was a dog. And instead of the period, he'd go,
yeah.
For the period, and it would be the question mark. And he would do.
Yeah. And I got to see him live twice, and it was just places packed. It was skewed a little older,
mm-hmm.
and he'd do this, just people just hurting when they left from live. And then he'd end with just the most gorgeous run of piano.
Yeah.
What a talent. So I'd study him, and I'd write out everything he'd said for verbatim.
Yeah.
In just the way he structured jokes and stuff, and you know, your interactive stuff on stage actually reminds me of him. Just that organic feel of
it's just timeless stuff.
Yeah,
and that's anytime you can break that wall between the stage and the audience. Yeah, I mean, like even tonight, you'll see him. Just why not? I mean, it's there.
Yeah,
go for it.
That's beautiful.
Go run around. So let me ask you this about Darren. Like, what if you want to get along with Darren Streblo, what kind of a person are you? Like, what do you shun? What do you like about other people? If I wanted to be your friend, let's say hypothetically. Because I've got so many, you know what I'm saying?
You probably do.
The cup is full. But I say I wanted to start like a B list of friends.
B, that's great. I'll go for.
Do
the
you
B
have
list.
A lot of friends?
That's great.
Like in Cloquet, or do you keep in touch with?
I have some very close friends, and the people that understand me the most. I have two or three that have no idea anything about comedy, and then guys like you who actually. Because it's such a weird thing that we do. Not only are we strange that we're doing comedy, but we're in this weird subset of clean comedy,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, we have a strange, let me say, different outlook on life and stuff. So to be around you guys is just refreshing knowing, okay, he understands where I'm coming from. I like nice people. I like encouraging people. I tend to be a little bit, let's see. I've been told I have an encouragement gift, but maybe that's just a nice way of telling me to settle down.
Yes, you do.
And your
radio show is proof of that. Just you're one of the best. You get it as far as when you interview a comic, a lot of times you're the only guy interviewing.
Yeah.
So you respond uproariously. To jokes, and you give it life.
I love comedy, and yeah. I love,
and it's not fake. It's just like you really.
I love humor, and I love that perspective. And,
yeah, because most comics, when they watch I find myself when I watch other comics, you're more critical. You're just, oh, how is he doing that? It's not that I don't like it. I'm just like, oh, how is he opening that? How is he segueing into that? And my wife is like, why aren't you laughing? And I'm like, why are you laughing? I'm like, I'm just more studying. You have to do that
because that's how you start, like, by watching the TV set, watching your favorite comedians.
Right.
You have to get a lower subtextual level and see the mechanics of stuff, and you get in the habit of that. So when I started radio and I started actually laughing at comedians again, I started feeling the endorphins and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I can smother people with encouragement because I like them so much, and just like, this is what I like and that one I like, and they say, is he being, what is he doing? Is that real? You know, so yeah. If people could put up with that, I think we could be good friends, I guess. I like the guy that I was talking about, the guy that's on stage that just comes out. If people can be okay with that guy, I think mm-hmm. I can trust them a little more to be friends, because I don't know if he's an easy person to be around. I'm still not sure.
Yeah.
I'm 45 years old and I'm still scared to let him out in real public. Isn't that weird?
Well, because you've seen Darren perform, haven't mm-hmm. you? How would you describe his style?
And keep in mind, he's right here. So that he might feel.
I think it's really honest, and that's why it's funny. I think people respect honest comedy or just honest performance, whether it's comedy or music or whatever. And I don't know. I like it. It seems transparent. Like, it seems like that's really you, like when you're performing. Yeah.
Oh, and well, I get it when you're talking about that, letting that person out, because Darren is like, he's very high. That was your opening line, right? For a long time. Hi. Just kind of that, hi. You know, yeah. I'd come up playing a guitar and Axl Rose, and you'd come out, hey. Big laugh, huge laugh. It's like, I was like, oh, yes, this guy's not going to try too, you know what I'm saying? try as hard as the last guy tried. Gee whiz, we need a break.
Yeah.
But then you'll do some of the loud, like your punchlines are very loud, very expressive. And you're like, this guy's just, it's like you go from 0 to 100.
It's surprising. Yeah, it catches you off guard.
It's surprising, but it's done with a dynamic that it just works mm-hmm. because it's outrageous.
Huh. You know, when I was a kid,
you're Tigger in an Eeyore package. Well, that's Darren Stryper.
Boy, well said. I need to digest that for a second. That's mm-hmm. true.
Yeah.
Because when I was a kid and I would let myself be myself, I would get so excited about stuff or expressing myself, I would start to yell and use a louder voice, which just, that's inappropriate mm-hmm. in set. And that would shut everybody down. And on stage, I think it was Brad Stein's influence, actually, because Brad is very expressive and loud on stage. And I used to travel with him a lot. And so I thought, I just emulate him. I would try to be him and yell a lot. And finally, he sat down with me out of mercy and said, Darren, stop. You're not me.
Yeah.
You smile in real life, and you're, and he said, you know, retain the good things about you and not try to be me. But the thing that remained was when I get really focused on something, I get kind of loud. And, that's the only place I could do it without losing relationship.
Where you talk about, Spanish. You learn Spanish.
Yeah.
And that you learn Juana pasa la banana, something like that. What
it
is
was
that
a video
joke?
It was a video class in northern Minnesota. Yeah, because they thought we got to learn a language. Why not Spanish? We live so close to Canada. Canada es un mucho grande fiesta, you know. So that was the phrase. They'd have us chant it. Juana pasa la banana, Elena. Say it again. Juana pasa la banana, Elena. We greet each other in the hallways thinking we were cool because it's a different language. Hey, Bill, wanna pasa la banana elena? Well, wanna pasa la banana elena to you too? What did I say? I don't know. And then I met a guy from Mexico, and that's not a greeting apparently because he was like, hola. And I'm like, hey, wanna pasa la banana elena? He says, why did you say that? And I said, what did I say? Juan throws a banana at a female midget. So one tends to think, well, where am I going to use this phrase now? You know, weird sports or something, you know, weird sports broadcasting. Juan's got the banana. He's running with the banana. Juan up, hustle up, banana, banana. She scores. You know,
yeah, yeah.
That doesn't, yeah. And the other phrase we learned was, mi ombligo se está quemando. You know, and as I thought that was kind of romantic. I was trying to get dates with it, you know. Señorita, mi ombligo se está quemando. Means my navel is on fire. So we didn't really learn a lot of helpful stuff in northern Minnesota. I think it's better now than when I was a kid.
So what was one of like the first bits that you wrote that you thought, this is, I'm getting somewhere here. This is, I'm proud of this.
Well, you know, when I was in high school, I went to summer camp and they had a talent night and I had no idea that I was going to be a comedian. But they said, well, why don't you get up and tell a story, Darren, because you're silly. We'd like to hear a story. So I did a Victor Borge bit. And then I did a Brian Regan, his plurals bit. And I explained that this wasn't my stuff.
Right.
But then I did a story about my Sunday school teacher who couldn't pronounce the names in the Bible. So it was like Job and Psalms. And my favorite story is how Jesus healed the 10 lepers. And then I talked about leprosy, this dreaded disease where you leap 30, 40 feet in the air and I had them falling and stuff like that. And the response was uproarious.
Yeah.
And I was very kind of just taken aback by how, because it felt, it was as, I think it was just kind of a God moment because it was just working. And I walked away from that. And a couple pastors came up to me at the camp and said, you know, have you ever thought about being like Mark Lowry and being a
This is before you were even doing anything.
Yeah. But to me, that was like saying, you should be an astronaut, dude.
Right.
I'm like, oh, thanks for that. I had no clue what that meant or whatever. So that was kind of that sort of a moment. But when I finally started, it took probably 3 or 4 years to really even just get it so that mechanically it was working on a weekly basis.
Because
there's just a lot to learn. I drove down to Acme Comedy Club.
They're in Minnesota, Minneapolis? Yeah,
it's a 2.5 hour drive. Yeah. I made it every Monday night for 4 years. And you do 3 minutes. And then you drive home. Yeah.
It's all of 2.5 hours too, isn't it?
Yeah.
To drive down there.
So it's 5 hours for 3 minutes, which sounds like, well, is that worth it? Absolutely. Because all the way there, you're thinking about your 3 minutes. And all the way back, you're thinking, how could I make that better?
Yes.
And then you're watching.
That time in the car is just, I can remember just going to the shows. You get that comedy energy going and sometimes lines will come. But more so at the after the show, you're driving home.
Yes.
Because you've got 2 hours to just think. Mm-hmm. Think and just and your mind just ruminates on that and plays and you're thinking how can I do it different what went well
out
of 3 minutes
and if I tape it and I'd listen to that tape all the way home and if it was a bad set it was a miserable 2.5 hour drive but you're just like I've got to make this better because you know you're doing clean comedy in a comedy club it's harder but boy, that really did burn out the dead wood out of your act very quickly. And plus you're literally seeing 20 or 30 other comedians get up and do 3 minutes and, oh, this worked. This didn't work. Mm-hmm. Why didn't that work?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember one time seeing a comedian get up. Dwight York was his name. Still is his name.
Yeah.
He does one-liner comedy. Very, he's kind of a great look to him. A little bit like, boy, this guy might be out of control. You don't know. Real super deep voice. Super funny. Very, very blue. The comic blue, before
blue
him.
Blue means dirty, everybody. Blue equal sign dirty.
You should have a word key guide on your podcast.
Comedy word key. Yeah.
But the comic before him was talking about going to a thrift store and someone was complaining because they were they pay $1 for these shoes and they don't even have laces in them. Where are the laces? I paid $1 for these shoes. And he was just like, these poor people, no wonder they don't have laces in the shoes. They're going to try to kill themselves in the back room by hanging themselves by the laces, all this stuff. And that was his whole bit. It was really funny. Well, Dwight came in maybe
20 minutes later, said, yeah, I just got here. I'm so upset. I tried to buy some shoes, didn't have any laces in them, you know, and the place went crazy. And that made a huge impact on me because I thought, yeah, he used what was in the room and created a moment instantly. And it was the biggest laugh of that whole 3 hour stretch. And you just don't forget that. That's just that's just education. I was just brilliant. I was you know, he became the person in the story. And I love to do that anytime I get a chance, and that's because of Dwight.
Yeah.
You know.
That's so good. I mean, that's too many times, and there's too much bad competition where in the comedy world. And that's what my experience was in clubs, was that it's just really sad. I mean, you got just got bitter. I thought I was going to find a little more joy. I mean, this really bitter, just drug infused, just depressive. Yeah.
Well, it's a hard personality, isn't it, to be anyway? And then if you don't have some joy in the midst of that, I'm pretty sure I would be a pretty bitter alcoholic if it weren't for Christ, because you know, comedy is so introspective. You're just
I'm a bitter alcoholic with Christ. So without Christ, I'd be like El Chapo or something. I'd be running guns, smacking babies. Oh gosh.
No, I have enough problems.
I accepted Christ. I'm still an alcoholic, and I hate people, but I'm so much better than I would have been in the past.
I am a great Christian. Even though I kill people. It's a hard thing to be that introspective and when you look really deep inside, you just see a lot of garbage in there, and it's depressing. And when you're a club comic, the alcohol is free. And I think you just naturally, that's how you cope with weeks and weeks and weeks on the road without solid relationships in your life. And, you know, it's a tough place to be. Heart kind of cries a little bit for some of my friends there.
But now did you ever have the inkling, the want to go to LA, New York, do that thing that a lot of people do?
You know, I haven't.
Why?
That's a great question, Tim.
Because I see these guys going, and I one of the things I feel sorry for them, you go to LA, we have, you know, friends that are in LA.
Yeah.
And when we found out what we're doing now is such a team effort. I mean, there's people on there's so many different fronts that you need somebody who knows what they're doing to handle.
Yeah.
And you need that support. And when you're out in LA, it seems like it's every man for himself. Even the people that are on your team, they're just trying to book you.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily love you or looking for your best interest. And
I have a lot of respect for people who jump into that fray, because it is hard. And I think it can make you a very good comic, but you know, I just don't feel like I belong in that world. I don't know why. I look at it and I go, it would be fun to be able to have access to crowds everywhere,
or at least to be around creative people. I think that's a cool,
well said. Yeah, I'd love it for that. But when I talk to my friends that moved out there, many of them move back and just say that was a mistake. Some do really well, you know, in New York or L.A. Yeah. I've always just, I don't know. I think having steady work has kept me from going there just as a fix to get more. You know, it hasn't always been, you know, when you do this, there are times you're just in famine because you're just not getting enough work.
Yeah.
But I have been able to make a living at it for the short time I've been in it. And I don't know. I think some people belong in that world and they thrive in it. And I don't think I'm one of them.
I think my decision as I went along was, I'm not going to go unless I'm called there.
Yeah.
And what I mean, not by calling by God, but somebody asked me to come as opposed to going and trying to work your way up through the ranks. I mean, a couple years ago, I don't know if I told you this, I got a call from Andrew Lloyd Webber's people in Broadway, New York. They're doing the musical.
Yeah, yeah,
did I talk to you about that?
Yeah.
With the Jack Black movie, School of Rock. They're doing the musical for that. So they called me and contacted, hey, you want to come audition for this?
Yeah.
And it ended up just, it didn't work out or work for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But I know I wanted to go and just try it, just see what it was like.
Yeah.
Because I didn't even know, I mean, because I love what I do so much right now. And do I want to go and, you know, spend a half a year to a year of my life doing, you know, Broadway and just same thing every night? And which I was fortunate enough to be in a place where I'm not, I have a choice.
Yeah.
And the choice that I have is a really good choice.
Yeah. Oh,
but,
yeah.
But terrific. I mean, but even that, it's, I'd want them to ask me to come.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's on my terms, but it's, you have some kind of a leverage.
Yes.
You know, they know who you are and stuff.
That makes more sense to me.
But it's, but you see, and my pastor, my old church does a ministry to people in the act, in the, movie industry, whatever, in California. They meet in Beverly Hills. It's like third Tuesday of the month. And you just like, when you go there, it's such a powerful thing because there's a lot of that every man for himself kind of mentality.
Yeah.
And it's, gosh, that's a tough way to go, man.
Yeah. And especially if you're sensitive, because rejection is hard anyway, but rejection is such a huge part of your life in that, it'll make, in those environments, and it'll make you better probably. And if you belong there, that's great. But it's different now than it was even 20 years ago, because the internet has made the playing field really different. I think the mindset is still the same. There used to be gatekeepers that discovered and promoted people. And to get in front of those gatekeepers was very important. So if you were serious about community, you wouldn't make it unless you went to an LA or New York, because those are the people that will get you in front of the people. They were the gatekeepers. Now you really have access to more people, but it's you don't have as many explosive popularity events where suddenly this person is famous. You really have to slowly build people that see you, like you.
They're not seeing it's see like the Beatles. Everybody saw the Beatles and Unsullivan the same time.
Yes.
I knew where I was when I saw the Beatles.
Yeah.
Well, now that, you know, they see Darren Streblo, but they were in different places.
Right.
I was on I pulled up a clip in June of this. Well, I just saw him last week on, my laptop.
Yeah. I saw him at Starbucks. Waiting
for a plane. Yeah. I saw him in a Starbucks over a guy's shoulder. I couldn't even hear what he was saying.
Like, but I knew I was a fan.
Who's this guy taking his shirt off?
He's got to stop doing that. I'm going to call security. Yeah. No, it's a different way. It's almost like you have to slowly build. And maybe maybe that's the way it's going to be in the future. I don't know what. It's still kind of the Wild West because of the internet. But I do I do like your approach, where you're invited as opposed to trying to push your way in front of people.
Well, I like your approach too, with bringing in other comics to your radio show. Your support for them, it's a good healthy. You know, you've been around Caleb, around most of these guys, a lot of these guys. I mean, it seems like it's a supportive. We're helping each other write bits and getting excited about helping each other write.
Yeah.
And I heard a guy speak at church last night. And he was talking about, how certain churches think they're better than other people.
Yeah.
And he says he equates them to ducks in a puddle. You know, these ducks in a puddle are, but there's ducks over there, and they're like, well, this puddle's bigger, and the ducks over here are like, well, now our puddle's bigger, and it's raining. It keeps raining. So, you know, eventually ends the story is, there's so much rain that they're all in the same.
Yeah.
It's a sea and you're all in the same.
Oh, that's,
you know what I'm saying? But I think that if we can get more comics, and I want to be like this more, it's like you, the analogy is you have a candle and other people have candles that aren't lit and yours is lit. Well, if you blow out, you know, their candles, it makes you shine brighter. But to help somebody light their candle, it takes nothing from you. To give them, you know, and to give them, meaning them spotlight, giving them your energy and your love, giving them whatever, stage time, whatever, just giving to other people.
Yeah.
And it just shines brighter in general. That's what I want to be as a performer.
Well, I think that is exactly what you're being, because you're...
And I
brought a lot of candle lighting to a lot of different people that have it's changed their lives.
Some people, you know, I want to light their candle and throw it in their shirt and burn.
It's not going to work for me. I don't wear one.
Right.
So yeah,
yeah. Yeah, people that you cross me, you're gonna lose some skin. I mean, I'm a Christian, but
we'll hurt you.
I'll cut you. I'll set you on fire. Burn you. I will set you on fire. But it's fun. So tell me, like, a couple more things for we've had such a great time. We may have to do a part two with this guy.
Well, that's nice. Thank you.
Cool.
Yeah, because I just want to hear him talk.
It yeah, you do have the best radio voice.
What a nice thing to
How
say.
How often do you hear Thank that? You. I mean, just in talking to people, even if they don't know
I
you have a radio
people
show.
People say that I have said, whoa, listen to that radio voice. You should do radio. And I say, thank you. I don't tell them anything. I just...
Actually, I do.
But I'm not like eloquent. You know, like the guys that mentored me in radio when I did radio for like 10 years before I did comedy. And the guys that I looked up to, not only did they have the voice, but they could speak about... you know, dimes for 35 minutes. And it would be just like, you'd want to write it down. It was so poetic the way they express themselves in words, and they never stutter and stuff like that. I'm not that guy. I'm very, I stammer and, you know, I
spit it out, Darren.
Yeah.
What?
See, yeah, exactly. that's what they go. It's like, what's wrong with them? Too many lead paint chips.
As a kid, as a listener, I wouldn't really want to listen to that guy, though. I'd want to listen to the Darren Struggle.
Well, that's interesting.
Because I'm not that guy, and I don't want to listen to another guy where I have to think about what he's saying because it's so over my head. I'd rather just listen to dudes that are just chalking it out and on a tour bus, and you can hear the bus in the background.
Yeah.
What a coincidence. Right, I think we're on a tour bus right now. Yeah. Just hammering out. Yeah, I mm-hmm. So I actually kind of disqualified myself in my mind. It's like I'm not really good for radio because I can't be the eloquent dude, but like you say, there's an emotional element to radio that you don't find in other media. And if you can be yourself, if you can be more real, your stammering, warts and all kind of self, and then talk about things that are important to people, it's very interesting and it's very comforting to have that in your app on your phone and listen to it on a regular basis because it's a connection. That's more real than I don't even know why it's more real than most video or other things, but it seems to work really well.
I think on part two, I want to talk to you more about radio and just what you've learned from it, how it started, where do you see it going, things like that. Because I mean, every time I talk to you, you're just picking up more and more stations, and radio is still such a viable thing. It's not it really hasn't gone away. I don't know. I don't see that it's gotten any weaker. I think it's just changed.
It has changed.
Because people still listen and get their information, and a lot of it comes from radio. And I find myself, you know, I find myself down, you know, yeah, you can download iTunes and things like that. But I mean, I just bought a record player. I'm listening to albums again. It's this, the different ways of listening to stuff and getting information and
that's right.
And entertainment. And,
I think a lot of people turn to YouTube and television to disconnect and recharge and just get out of life a little bit and just kind of let your psyche readjust and refocus. You know, it's entertainment. People turn to radio to feel something, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
To connect and get have an emotional connection, and that's exciting for me as a person who likes to have that with people.
Cool.
It's more laid back. It's more, but you can get into. I mean, this radio comedy is a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even listening to bits that are stage bits on the radio, there's something special about that because the theater of the mind is such a beautiful thing. So I look forward to talking to you about that on your next.
And I have one thing podcast to say to you, my friend. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
Roll. Roll dang, like, roll dang tide.
Yeah. I have no idea what you're talking about. You know, it just fits my head. It just fits my head. I don't understand.
Well, thanks everybody for listening to Potty Break. I think this is our episode 3, and we want to talk more to Darren Strebelow on our next episode. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Caleb, for running the
just making this happen.
The levers.
Turning knobs.
Shout outs. Let's do some shout outs.
Shout out, baby.
Shout out to Coffee again.
Shout out to Coffee.
Always seems to get a shout out.
Shout out to University of Alabama.
Sandals from Kohl's. Gosh, we got to get a picture of those sandals. I just wish people could see them because they're awesome.
Yeah.
They're like Jesus sandals.
You might lose listeners.
That's like
brown leather.
It's like something a kid would make like in an eighth, like in an eighth grade. Eighth grade leather class.
They got the latches and everything.
I'm a trendsetter. That's right.
But anyway, thanks for joining us. And we'll check you later. Yo. Peace out.